And now, a man who campaigned against Barack Obama in all 57 states, Mark Gillar.
I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. There ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Welcome to the Tea Party Power Hour. Can you guess who my first guest is this morning? Well, if you said Lee Greenwood, you are correct. Lee's here today to talk to us about a tour that he's been going on to support the Romney-Ryan campaign. Lee, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Great to be talking to you this morning.
It's great to have you back on the show. We got a lot of favorable response the last time you were here. I don't think I have to tell you that song really connects with Tea Partiers.
Well, I'm sure it does. And I've been on the campaign trail with Romney Ryan. Both wonderful guys, good family men. We've known Mitt Ryan for a couple, 3 years now. Just so happy the way the debates have been going. We were in Ohio, of course, where there's a great deal of unemployment, where he made a wonderful speech. We were in Colorado with Paul Ryan, in Virginia with Romney, and in Florida as well. And things are just going really well. What surprises me, I think, Mark, in the audiences that we've been seeing at the rallies, is the ages are getting a little bit younger in all of the rallies. And I think there's a couple of reasons for that. I believe people are dragging their kids to see who will be the next president and want to see them now so they can tell their friends they did that, because that's kind of the way kids are. And I think younger people are getting more interested in the message. And a lot of people may be out of work, and so they don't have to go to work during the daytime, so they have the time on their hands to come see a rally.
Well, that's kind of sad, but I think it's very, very true. You mentioned the debates, Lee. What is your take on, well, let's start with whether or not either candidate looks very presidential. Compare Romney's appearance, his demeanor, to Obama's, and just tell me what you think about the way the two men have presented themselves, talking about purely poise, aesthetics, that type thing, not necessarily the content of their messages.
Well, I think the president looks presidential. There's no doubt that he dresses nice, not overweight. He's slim. He's active. He's a basketball player. He's a family man. He has no track record, and he's a good orator, so he talks a good game. But Mitt Romney also looks presidential, looks sharp in a suit. He's not overweight. He's the right age. Great family man. I know his wife, Ann, and his sons. And so I think here, you may have looked at the last debate and saw the president looking somewhat angry, while Mitt Romney had more of a pleasant look throughout the debate. They even mentioned that. Now, in the vice presidential debate where Paul Ryan and Joe Biden were together, you saw the constant smirks from Joe Biden, who was like, well, you know, you really don't know the big picture here. If you knew all the facts, you wouldn't be trying to be vice president. But the president said, and when he was elected 4 years ago, he said, if I don't cut the national debt in half, I'm a one-term president. That's his statement. It was prophetic. Yes, absolutely, he's going to be a one-term president because he can't keep a promise.
What is your take on how close the race is despite Barack Obama's extremely poor economic performance?
After the last debate, it was 47-47, but to tell you the truth, it's going to depend on who comes to the polls. And I think it's a lot more in Mitt Romney's favor right now, and they're afraid to admit it. I know the White House would certainly not admit that because it would seem demeaning to them, but I'm very confident that Romney's going to win this election, and we're going to have a change of power, and we're going to have a flourish of business. And so I'm excited about that.
Well, Wall Street firms are sitting on billions in investment capital that they don't want to put at risk right now, because let's face it, if Obama gets reelected, the economic future is a big question mark. No one knows what's going to happen if Obama gets reelected. Are taxes going to rise through the roof? What's going to happen? Is there going to be more regulation in the name of saving the planet that's going to choke off businesses? I mean, businesses are rightfully afraid and cautious right now. But I agree with you, Lee. I think if Obama is voted out and we have a man like Mitt Romney who understands business, who understands how to create jobs, we're going to see the big firms stop sitting on all that capital that they're sitting on, and they're going to start expanding, they're going to start hiring people. And even though a lot of people are saying, well, Romney's not going to be able to fix this in one term, I really think he will.
we've got a great democratic process, and every 4 years we can change. We don't like it. And I think that's where we are. It has not gone in the right direction. Got to give somebody else a chance. And the president cannot blame Mitt Romney for taking a lot of his company offshore when the regulations is what's choking the business down. I mean, only a smart businessman would do that. Now, if you get rid of regulations, reduce the taxes on business, they'll all come back. Do you know what the tax is on the wealthy in France? It's 75%. That's insane. We've got to pull it down here. I know what I pay. I pay about 37%, almost 38%. I live in Tennessee, so we don't have a state tax, but we have an income tax, a sales tax that's 9%. So taxes are killing everybody who are working. I don't believe in the spread of the wealth. I believe in people working, giving them a chance. I only have two or three employees myself in my business. Everybody else is on a contract basis, and they work damn hard. And so when they have their own businesses that they build, I give them credit for it. And help them all I can.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned building a business. Obama famously said, or infamously said, that you have this business, if you're a success, you didn't build that. I mean, I'm paraphrasing. And after the fact, he tried to go back and patch it up by, well, what I was saying was is that, you know, you didn't build those roads and bridges. But I think if you listen to the entire context of that speech, where he also says things like, a lot of people think I'm successful because I'm so smart. Well, a lot of people are smart. A lot of people think I'm successful because I work so hard. A lot of people work hard. So what he was essentially suggesting is that you either inherit your wealth or it's pure blind luck.
Well, of course, wherever we work, just like the military, there's always a support group. The people behind the combat troops are just as important as those who are fighting. And in any business, you're going to have people who work. Let me tell you, I have worked harder for other people, Mark, than I work for myself. I guarantee you, I wanted to make myself so important when I was working out in Nevada and in California for a living and not making much. I wanted to be so important that they found it hard to let me go. If I had another job and they couldn't match my salary, they were sorry to see me leave because I did such a great job. I don't care whether it's driving a car, selling pizza, working in a hardware store or a music store. You know, I worked a lot of different kinds of jobs. I was a farmer as well, and I understand hard work, and people should be rewarded for hard work.
Absolutely. And I think if you're trying to fan the flames of class warfare, you try to make people think, well, all those people that are successful, they don't really deserve that. You deserve a piece of that, too. And that's exactly what he was doing. And for a guy that was supposed to be bringing us all together, in many ways, this country is more divided than it ever has been. At least that's my take. What's yours?
That's exactly right. All of the things that cause unity are not the things he's doing. You look back at the Reagan, and I hate to point the finger at a Republican, but Ronald Reagan may have been the greatest president ever for unification. He was an actor, yes, but he knew actually how to make people feel good about themselves, how to unite the country. And furthermore, about international politics. This has been the worst president for international politics for us. This country has not done well. Everybody does not like us. We've been a lot of places we don't belong. And as far as reducing the size of the military, you cannot do that. People look at us as defenseless when you reduce the size of your military. So that's one of the things we have to keep. And that comment the other night on the debate where he said, we have actually ships they land airplanes on, and we don't use horses and bayonets anymore. Did you see the after-show talking points? I think it was Wallace, and he said, at that moment, a Marine tweeted and said, oh, yes, we still use bayonets, by the way, in the Marines.
You can add that to the long list of things that he has said that are very embarrassing for our commander-in-chief. Here's a guy who mispronounced the word corpsman 3 times in one very short speech. So he's not very familiar with anything that has to do with the military. In fact, you know, he was part of a group in college that encouraged people not to register for selective service. If we're going to be extremely honest, he's anti-military, which is why when he gives speeches to our men and women in the service, particularly those that are risking their lives and serving overseas right now, they don't do anything other than very light, polite clapping. Whereas if you contrast that with, you know, say, Bush 43 or Bush 41 or Reagan, whenever they spoke to the military people watching the speeches were wildly enthusiastic. And those reactions from the military whenever Obama speaks, I think, actually speak volumes about their opinion of him.
It does, and it's sad to see, for a commander-in-chief who's supposed to be a champion of the military, he has such distaste for it. I think he's also anti-American. I think he wants basically America to be an international country and have no sovereignty. I will be with Bush 41, by the way, day after tomorrow in Houston, Texas, where we're filming the last version of Extreme Home Makeover. I'm singing on the show at their request, but they're going to give 10 homes to 10 soldiers who are amputees and they don't know they're getting them. And President Bush will be one of the honorary people on the show. And so I'm taking my kids out of school, and my wife and I and them are all flying down together just to meet with the president, who I haven't seen in about a year or two.
Fantastic. You know, I'm talking to you from College Station, Texas. Actually, I'm right on the border between Bryan and College Station, so we have the Bush 41 Library here. He's extremely well thought of here. Just an amazing guy. I think even when he was in his early 80s, he was still jumping out of planes. So, yeah, very well respected in a lot of places, but there's a special place in our hearts here in Bryan College Station for George Herbert Walker Bush. And by the way, I don't watch a lot of television, but that is certainly one of my favorite programs. To actually see a program that isn't about a bunch of people backstabbing each other on an island, but is instead about making a huge difference in someone's life, in this case particularly the military people, that's just fantastic, and I really hate to see that show go away.
Well, as a footnote, Herbert Walker Bush signed the foreword in my new book, Does God Still Bless the USA, which has been out for about 6 months now, and unprecedented, as a non-author, I've been invited to do the National Book Fair in Washington, D.C., November 13th. So I'm thrilled to be able to do that. But I was also thrilled to have President Bush write a foreword for my book.
That is indeed an honor. Now, there's also, as I recall, a prayer guide that's in the back of it.
Yeah, Prayers of a Patriot, which when we were writing this book, and we intended to have it out a year ago, but with our schedules, it's just so tough. And we pored over the paragraphs and sentences every night before we go to bed. And so she was responsible for writing the Prayers of a Patriot in the back of the book. It's a 30-day calendar.
That's right. I remember you telling me that now. I love books like this by non-authors, though. I'm going to be honest with you. I haven't finished it yet, but I've read some of it, and I think you did a great job. I had Sarah Palin's dad and brother on yesterday, and they've written a book, Our Sarah Made in Alaska, and it also is very well done. And I love the idea of average everyday Americans, if we can call you that with your enormous success in the music industry, but you know, just good people putting words to paper. It's
well, I consider myself
thing.
A common man. I was raised on a farm. I know how to sew and iron because I used to wash out my socks and lay them on the bathtub. I didn't have a shower until I left home at 17 because we were pretty poor. So I recognize hard work. I spent 20 years in Nevada meeting all of the glamour that Vegas had to throw at me before I had my own career. And so you know, I consider myself the common guy. And when I think people know that when I get on my stage and I do shows. And maybe that's one of the things that I tied this current election to, is those days when Reagan and Bush and Ford and even Carter would run around and visit people in their towns, and they recognize that these are just common people who've done extraordinary things.
That is so true. And I've been told that even Clinton liked to visit with the people almost to the point of making himself late all the time, because he'd be leaving a hotel going through some back exit and there would be a few members of the staff there holding out pieces of paper and a pen, and he wouldn't just sign very quickly. He'd ask every one of them their name and where they were from and that type of thing. And in retrospect, he was probably just looking for a date. But, you know, the bottom line is...
Well, you know, Bill Clinton was a very smart president. He's a very smart man. And he's just, I don't think he's blue collar. I think he's white collar. And his education proves how smart he is. Great communicator, though. And a lot of the presidents, they have that in common. President Obama obviously has been a great communicator, but his track record is so poor that, you know, when he starts delving into facts, he always avoids the main fact, and that is his track record has been dismal over the past 4 years.
Oh, absolutely. And it's been fun to watch Democrats scramble to try to make excuses for him. With regard to the fact that we've got nearly twice as many people on food stamps, I've heard Democrats say, well, those are people that should have been on food stamps when Bush was in office, but Obama made sure everybody that needs food stamps gets food stamps. I thought that was creative. With regard to the unemployment figures, they're saying, well, that's because a very, very large number of people entered the workforce. Actually, the workforce has gotten smaller, so that doesn't pan out. you know, they make excuses for him bowing overseas, which is very, very embarrassing. And I was so glad that Mitt Romney brought that up last night. If you're the president of the United States, you don't run around the country on an run around the world rather on an apology tour. That makes us look weak, vulnerable.
Yeah, and when you consider international people, I think Americans are passive. Basically, we're just a passive people. We like to get along and have a peaceful life. Mm-hmm. But people in other countries, particularly those who are jealous of the economy and our wealth in this country, you cannot appear weak. You have to show them strength, particularly the Russians and the Chinese, and certainly the Middle Eastern culture. They only respect power. I was just taken back by that. And also, when we had our ambassador and the other three Americans killed, and no response, my jaw fell off. I didn't know what to say.
I can tell you this: there's been that big debate about when and where Obama finally acknowledged that to be an act of terror. But as someone who knew someone who died in the Fort Hood massacre, the gentleman's name was Michael Cahill. I worked as a drug rep for 14 years. He was a physician assistant that was within my routing, and he was the only civilian killed. Now, we weren't close friends. I'm not going to say that we were, but we always shook hands. He always had a joke for me, sometimes a little on the naughty side, but he was just a very jolly type fellow. And when I think about him being killed, and I understand that more than anything, he was a victim of political correctness, because we had all the signs that this guy was about to go off. He was interacting with some of the same people overseas that the hijackers on 9/11 interacted with, some of the writings he had put out, but no one wanted to say anything because they were afraid that we might be stepping on his faith, or we might be insulting him or stereotyping him or profiling him. So a bunch of people had to die because no one had the courage to say, you know, this guy is out there. He's interacting with terrorists, and we need to do something about it. And the gentleman I know is now dead because of that. And regardless of when Obama acknowledged recent acts of terror, I can tell you to this day, he still has not acknowledged the Fort Hood killings as being an act of terror.
Yeah, it's terrible. I hate to call the president un-American. I don't want to damage the office of the president, but when he first took office, you'll notice that there was any patriotic salutes to the flag or the military. He never put his hand over his heart, which is tradition about loving your country, and never wore a flag on his lapel. I think that's a must for a president. There's one more issue that has bothered me from the beginning. This last issue is the three things you have to be president. You have to be 35 years old, non-felon, and born in this country. And the secrecy around his birth certificate from the very beginning made me so suspicious that whether it was right or wrong that he was born in Hawaii, I didn't trust him any time after that.
Let me say this about that, because you're talking to the person who actually produced and narrated all the videos for Sheriff Arpaio's two press conferences on the Obama probe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where he was born. I don't think he knows where he was born. But I can tell you this with God as my witness, Lee, that birth certificate has been altered.
Yeah, it's been,
and I've talked with some of the top computer experts in the United States, including one woman who's written two books on Adobe software, and she's been the technical editor on about 100 more books on graphic software. And we went into Adobe Illustrator, and we looked at the layers, which the layers in and of themselves don't necessarily mean that it's altered, but the construction of those layers does. And I can show you, Lee, in fact, I've got some videos I can send you, if you'll be kind enough to give me an address where I can send them, that I produced for Sheriff Arpaio that leaves no question in my mind or in the minds of most of the people who viewed them that the birth certificate's been altered, not completely forged. There was something on record from the beginning. That's where those two birth announcements came from in the paper. But they've been altered. Basically, a lot of the holes have been filled in. Secondly, Selective Service Card is even more blatantly altered. In fact, it's a complete forgery. And, you know, to the point of people that have worked for the post office for 30 years say the postal stamp on it is completely fake. You can see where they took the year 2008, cut it in half, and turned the 08 upside down and made it 80. And they even tried to shave off the top of the 8 because the bottom of the 8 was bigger. And when they turned it upside down, it looked lopsided. And they didn't do a good job. And his social security number was issued by the wrong state. It doesn't pass E-Verify, and even in the Social Security system's own records, they show that it was originally given to somebody who was born in 1890. So, I mean, but, and let's forget about all that for a minute. In addition to those documents, he sealed all his school records. Someone said, well, gee whiz, if he was born out of the country, we could look at his mom's passport records and see if she left the country about the time he was born. Guess what? The government accidentally destroyed those.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so everywhere you look, the records have either been destroyed, sealed, or forensic document experts are telling us that they've been altered. So the man is a mystery man. It's really bizarre. Why did he wear a ring when he was in college and then asked Michelle to put that same ring on his finger when they got married? It's the exact same ring he wore back in the 80s when he wasn't married, but he wore it on his ring finger. I mean, there are so many things about this guy that just don't add up. Now, again, I'm not saying I know where he was born. I'm just saying the computer forensics demonstrate that the document's been altered. And the fact that no one would look at that, I don't know who
polices that. There's supposed to be somebody that polices that.
You know, Lee, I don't know who polices it either, but whoever it is, they're not doing a very good job. Look, I know we ran a little long on time. I apologize, but it was great having you on the show, and we look forward to having you back again sometime.
Mark, thanks very much.
You've been listening to the Tea Party Power Hour with Mark Gillar.